hates talking about
really?
It.
But, I went up and you weren't there, so fuck me.
Oh, okay.
No, I just fucking about bicycles and how we get this thing back up.
I haven't had a chance to fight.
Totally. So, Mia called me. She was a little concerned. And she wants to make sure there's a clear win. As I told Tom, just tell me what the win is.
It's your baby.
Well,
we have figured something out that I want to bounce on you guys later today. Okay. I guess we gotta start
Good morning, Portland. Today is Wednesday, February 10th. It's the year 2010. It's the 9:30 session of the Portland City Council. We'll come to order. Good morning, Carla. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Leonard?
Yep.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We'll begin with communications, starting with item number 190.
Request of James B. Lee to address council regarding cost of replacing the Selwood Bridge.
Good morning, Mr. Lee. Welcome back.
Good morning.
How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is James Lee. I reside on Southeast Mitchell Street in Portland, and I speak only for myself. Thank you for hearing me today. Several weeks ago, the mayor and colleagues in other agencies sent a letter to the governors of Washington and Oregon asking for more control on the process involving the Columbia River crossing. I'm here to strongly support that, and I'll amplify it at the end of my testimony. I also want to say that although it is apparent that the Selwood Bridge is a Multnomah County project, in fact, all the funding comes from either the state of Oregon, ODOT, that's by far the greatest source of the funding, a bit from the feds. And Multnomah County, as when I checked last year, had no money in that at all. In fact, I even checked with the auditor. The auditor had no, Multnomah County auditor had no record of how the money was being spent. The point is that both the Columbia River Crossing and the Selwood Bridge are grossly inflated projects. I calculate that it's possible to replace the two interstate bridges for something on the order of $800 million. And if ODOT is telling you that it's going to cost $3 billion or whatever, that's a line. Don't buy it. Same way at the Selwood Bridge. They're saying $324 million when $84 million, $80 million, something like that, would be perfectly adequate. I would suggest strongly that as long as we are fighting the present administration of the Oregon Department of Transportation, nothing really is going to get that is reasonable and cost-effective is going to be done on these two projects. So, therefore, I'd like to urge the mayor and his colleagues to formally ask for the resignation of Mr. Matthew Garrett, who's the head of the department, the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. In the 1920s and 30s, the Oregon Highway Commission had what is generally regarded as the finest bridge engineering and design section in the country, if not the world. This was under the redoubtable Condi Balcom McCulloch. He's responsible for all those wonderful bridges on the coast and elsewhere. He was also a lawyer and a very good economist. He was really a polymath. And his philosophy of designing bridges was to go to the stream. He said, in Oregon, we teach our engineers to go to the stream, design a bridge for utility and economy, and design it to blend with the terrain. Well, he must be turning over in his grave right now because these are just really, really dreadful projects that his heirs and assigned are committing to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, very much. Appreciate your testimony. Carla, can you please read communications item number 191?
Request of Joe Walsh to address council regarding veterans.
Welcome, Mr. Walsh. Glad you're here.
Good morning.
You just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock in front of you will help you count down your 3 minutes.
The oxygen is good, but it beeps, so speaking with the oxygen is very difficult. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It gives me great pleasure to say ladies and gentlemen. My name is Joe Walsh. I am a veteran. I was in the United States Navy 1962 to 1971. I came out and opposing the Vietnam War. And I came here today to talk to you about a visit by Karl Rove tonight. But I'm going to go off script. I gave you copies of what my statement was going to be because an incident happened this morning that just outraged me. I got a phone call at 8:15 this morning from the police department wanting to know about the demonstration. Now, I am not the leader of this demonstration. It is recorded. I will supply it to anybody that wants it. The police officer said he wanted to talk about the demonstration. So why would he call me at 8:15 on the day of the demonstration? To get information? To make sure everybody is safe? Nonsense. It's a form of intimidation. And you have a problem with your police department intimidating people. I don't intimidate very well. I was in the Navy. I was in a war zone. There will be a demonstration. This man that's coming to your city today is a criminal. He should be before a judge and not getting $35,000 for 2 hours' work. That's what the World Affairs Council is going to pay this traitor. Traitor he is. He outed a CIA operation. He is a traitor. $35,000 plus expenses. And the police are calling me? Why don't they arrest him? I gave copies. You can read my original statement. It is much more coherent, but I am really angry. I am a nonviolent person, but I'm telling you right now, if you keep shutting down the nonviolence, you leave only one option. And somebody in government better wake the hell up. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Walsh. Carla, can you please read communications item number 192?
Request of Ibrahim Mubarak to address council regarding homelessness.
Mr. Mubarak. All right. He's not here. Can you please read council communications item number 193?
Request of Calvin Martinez to address council regarding homelessness.
Calvin Martinez. All right. Can you please read council communications item number 194?
Request of Barry Joe Stoll to address council regarding police stopping bicyclists that do not have a backlight.
Mr. Stoll. Hi, welcome back to council. Glad you're here.
Morning, Council. Last Friday, I was at Sisters of the Road Cafe when Oregon Senator Walt Brown stopped by, and I said to him and his new wife, Beverly, are you sure you have a ticket to eat here today? And a minute or so later, Beverly was saying, well, you were right, because there is a reservation system. Sisters of the Road has had such an inundation of folks that they've really had to scale back the service of providing meals here in Portland simply to provide a safe place. So what I want to kind of touch on here is the quote, which will be in my next candidate page, that, gee, you were right, and I thought you were just messing with us. Well, that's what I'm doing here today, folks. I'm right, and I'm still messing with you. We had a comment earlier this morning about the Portland police and how if they're going to be the mad dogs that they are and the homicidal gang that they are, that people are just going to get violent. And that's not what I'm here about. I'm here to be nonviolent. And so my issue is that I have been engaged in an ongoing, unrelenting one-way street with the Portland police. Now, I wrote down this morning on the MAX, and I might comment that Mr. Mubarak and the other gentleman might be tied up. There was a all the bridges were up, and that would include the Steel Bridge and the MAX, so who knows how they're able to get here this morning. I personally was delayed on the Hawthorne Bridge with about 50 bicyclists. I don't want to go over my time. The issue is that on my MAX right here, I was talking with a gentleman, and I kind of went into my comedy routine. Hi, this is the Portland Police, Homeland Security. Yes. We got this report. We got this fellow on the MAX. He says he's going to kill a guy. Uh-huh. And it's on video. What should we do? Oh, allow the video to be destroyed and let the guy go free? Okay. That's what the Portland Police did. That happened to me. That's absolutely shameful. It's also shameful that that fellow was a PGE Park employee, and that PGE Park is getting given away basically by the city to a millionaire. Not a good policy. So my issue is, I've been fighting government and racist police corruption in this little city for a long time. It has been fighting back, and that's just inappropriate. And the Oregon Vehicle Code provides that a bicyclist is not without the proper equipment if they have a red light or reflector. I had a copy of that statute, but you know, you don't need a weatherman to tell you which way the wind blows. It's simply in the vehicle code. So if you go to Oregon Revised Statutes, look in the index, look up bicycles, look up equipment, you'll get to something like chapter 815.0280, subsection 2 parentheses C parentheses C, and it'll say that I was not violating the law when I was harassed by the Portland police. I want this city to start being respectable. Thank you. I have some materials.
Yeah, can you give that to Carla? That'd be great. All right, that gets us to the consent agenda. Is there anyone who wishes to pull an item from the consent agenda?
I wanted to pull 210.
210 is pulled. Anybody else?
Was another one?
207.
207 comes back to my office, please.
All right. Can you please read the title for 207?
207, amend contract with SAP Public Services, Inc. to provide additional post-go-live stabilization consulting services for $200,000 for city SAP Enterprise Resource Planning System implementation.
Unless there's objection, 207 is referred back to Commissioner Fritz's office.
That's not the right one. Sorry.
That's all right.
Let me find the one that is my office.
It's 210 you wanted to refer back.
210 gets referred back, sorry. And then okay. 207 was the one
210.
I wanted.
210, authorize a contract with online business systems to provide program management services to the Bureau of Emergency Communications on behalf of the Portland Dispatch Communications Consortium.
Unless there's objections, item number 210 is referred back to Commissioner Fritz's office.
Thank you.
207 is pulled. Anybody wish to testify on the consent agenda?
Well, wait a second. Was 207 intended to be pulled or not?
Yes.
It is, 207 and 210.
210 goes back to Commissioner Fritz's office, and 207 is pulled for...
Okay.
Is that correct?
Yes,
did I get that
thank
right?
you.
Okay. All right. Anyone consent agenda? All right. Carl, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Fritz.
Thank you very much, Mayor and colleagues. I also wanted to note that on item 209, we're refunding parks bonds and saving the taxpayers $400,000. So I think that's terrific. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye.
All right. We have two times certain. The first one is at 9:30, and it I believe we'll please read the title for one item 195 and 196, both are non-emergency ordinances.
195, authorize the mayor to sign a new good neighbor agreement for PGE Park on behalf of the City of Portland. 196, approve the updated comprehensive transportation management plan for PGE Park.
Mr. Logsdon, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm David Logsdon with the Office of Management and Finance. And with me is Mike Coleman from Kittleson and Associates. The decision to bring Major League Soccer to Portland requires an update to the current Good Neighbor Agreement and the transportation plan for PGE Park. And this morning is the public hearing on these two revised plans. The current Good Neighbor Agreement and Transportation Plan have been in place since 2000, when then Civic Stadium was last renovated. And since 2000, PGE Park has been a good neighbor. There have been few issues and few complaints coming from the residents and businesses in the areas around the park. And as a result, major changes to the Good Neighbor Agreement and transportation plans did not seem to be warranted. And last November, we formed a work group with representatives from the park operator, from Goose Hollow, and from the Northwest District to look at the Good Neighbor Agreement, discuss some potential changes and updates, and to assess any impacts that we could forecast from the arrival of Major League Soccer. And in the Good Neighbor Agreement before you this morning, we have made several significant improvements I would like to highlight. And first is in the security program. There is now a requirement that the operator have 24-hour, 7-day-a-week security presence within the park. And there's also a requirement that for all events, it would be Portland police on site in addition to the private security that they normally have there. On the litter program, the northern boundary had been Burnside Street. That boundary has been extended up to Northwest Flanders to capture, you know, more of the litter that may be placed in the neighborhood following events. And on a daily basis, the operator will be cleaning the perimeter of the park. And on parking enforcement, the Neighborhood Oversight Committee will be working with the Transportation Office this coming fall, looking at enforcement strategies for the neighborhoods around the park with the goal to enhance the visibility and the effectiveness of the parking enforcement program in gearing up for the arrival of MLS in the spring of 2011. The Good Neighbor Agreement was recently approved by the boards of both the Goose Hollow and the Northwest District. And with that, I would like to introduce Mike Coleman from Kittleson, a local transportation and planning firm. Kittleson was hired by Peregrine to update the transportation plan for PGE Park. And Mr. Coleman's here today to provide a brief summary of the update and answer any questions council might have.
Thank you. Morning.
Good morning.
Let me just brief you very quickly on the comprehensive transportation management plan. I do have a couple of slides. Hopefully these PowerPoint slides will help. What I wanted to cover is the work we did, the objectives we tried to accomplish, and then the specific measures that we've recommended to the Good Neighbor Agreement Working Committee. We basically looked at four things to determine where we're our real starting point. First item was to take a look at the current CTMP, see how well it's working, identify the measures that were most effective and that were actually in operation at the moment, and getting the input of those who were responsible for implementing those current measures. Secondly, we did a good inventory of the existing transportation infrastructure, looking for the opportunities and liabilities for capitalizing on what the infrastructure has available for managing traffic, accommodating parking, and that sort of thing. Thirdly, we looked for new and creative opportunities. Technology-wise, a lot of things have changed in just 10 years, and some of the strategies that were in place in the current CTMP are a bit antiquated, and there's new opportunities through online ticket purchasing and that sort of thing to actually mitigate some of the transportation impacts of a large event. And then finally, we actually watched how people attend a major event. We specifically looked at the Timbers playoff game back in October. It was a perfect situation for us to observe because the weather was perfect, the game was a do-or-die sort of situation, and the attendance was over 14,000 people, which is comparable to what we would expect when Major League Soccer arrives. With that information, we try to accomplish three things. One, the first one is to discourage drivers from parking in the residential portions of the immediate neighborhood. Secondly, we wanted to try to find ways to make it as convenient as possible to travel to an event without using a motor vehicle. And then finally, for those who do drive, we wanted to come up with strategies that would help those drivers go directly to a parking space rather than circulating around the neighborhood looking for that one stall that's not there and working their way out until they either finally find it or get frustrated enough to use an on-site parking lot sort of parking opportunity. So with that, we came up with 12 measures. Many of them are already part of the current CTMP. A few of them are new. Three ideas to capitalize on the light rail service were to perhaps extend the free rail zone out to Goose Hollow in order to make it easier or more convenient for folks to use the parking garages in the Central Business District and then use light rail to get to the park. Secondly, adding additional MAX trains after the events. That's usually when, obviously, the biggest crush is. Everybody wants to go home at the same time, and if that part of the event goes well, then light rail would be that much more attractive for folks. And then thirdly, this is really a continuation of a current practice, which is to provide a free day of game TriMet pass for everyone who is a season ticket holder. Right now, I think there's maybe, if I remember correctly, maybe 700 season ticket holders at PGE Park. When Major League Soccer arrives, that number is hopefully going to reach something like 12,000 of the 14,000 folks that are expected at a typical game. All 12,000 of those folks would have the option of receiving that free pass. Bicycle parking. The event in October was a great illustration of what the potential is for bicycling to an event. With the weather being perfect, being a day game when folks could come and get home and before dark, we saw bicycles locked to everything that didn't move. We counted 236, exactly 236 bikes in the immediate area during the game. So that was encouraging just to see what happened in that circumstance. An additional measure, the two measures we have in mind is to increase the amount of permanent parking in the immediate area. We anticipate within a very quick field study, there's about 70 permanent stalls, or call them stalls, parking opportunities for bikes right now. That could increase by another 170 if you're just looking at the area bounded by 20th, Burnside, 17th, and Salmon. Those would all be in public space. Those would all be racks that would be available 365 days a year, but certainly be available for the events at the park. A second strategy that we've proposed is to actually provide secured parking on the days of events. We hope that maybe that could actually be housed in the stadium. There just really isn't an opportunity for that kind of space. But to actually establish something on a day of the event sort of situation outside the stadium. That way folks who are bringing their bikes and may have valuables that they aren't able to bring into the stadium could actually have their bikes securely parked and monitored during the game.
In Toronto, I wasn't at a soccer game, but I was there years ago for a different sporting event, and there local version of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance had sort of temporary secured concierge kind of bike parking, exactly like you're talking about. It worked really well.
I think that's definitely how it's something we'd want to emulate. As far as car parking, several measures related to parking. First, to retain the current RPPP program. Secondly, to consider, I'm not sure where the group finally got, but consider reducing the time a person could park in the residential area to 90 minutes. The thinking there is that currently a lot of the area is 2 hours for visitor parking, which was plenty of time to keep a baseball fan from parking in the neighborhood for a three-hour baseball game. The soccer matches tend to be exactly right around 2 hours, so there was some thought about reducing the time in order to discourage soccer fans. Third measure would be to heighten the enforcement, which Dave has already mentioned, and just the sheer presence of enforcement early in the event and throughout would be an effective way of reinforcing the parking restrictions. And then measure number nine, to actually offer prepaid event parking with a person's ticket so that they can know exactly what parking garage or what parking lot to go to. And then a few more ideas that are, didn't quite fall in a nice category. Knowing that MLS is likely to draw from a broader regional base, there may be opportunities for special bus service from other communities and that sort of thing, or the more common restaurant-hosted bus and trying to encourage that use in order to reduce the number of cars that actually arrive and need to be parked. Measure 11 would be to come up into the 21st century and make the websites for PGE Park, the Timbers, and the Portland State Vikings a really good source of information, hopefully in real time on the day of the events as well, to assist folks in getting to and from the events as conveniently as possible. And then finally, this is an interesting one. Measure 12 would be considering closing the eastbound portion of Morrison along the north side of the stadium. Right now, the majority of the traffic is westbound because most of Morrison is a one-way street westbound entering this area. And if we could even close half the street, it would create some new space, kind of a wild card space for different opportunities. Since we originally proposed this idea, there's a lot of interest in possibly making that stretch of Morrison one-way westbound permanently and reclaiming some of that street space for other uses for the community year-round and for events in particular.
Did you... So question, they're from folks that live in the southwest near the stadium on the north side of Burnside. Is that right? So southwest corner of the quadrant of the neighborhood, but north of Burnside. There's been some concerns expressed that the permit marker system is might not be adequate or is out of date or has been removed. I can't remember. We'll hear some testimony. You look at any of those issues?
We haven't heard that specifically. We do have staff here from PBOT, Parking Enforcement. They may be able to address that. I think there's been some concern about there's two programs in Northwest and maybe merging them into a single program because there is confusion about because they do have a bit of different regulations on them and they're, you know, they're abutting each other. So there's been some talk about maybe a single program would be, right, you know, more understandable.
And we've got a partnership with the neighborhood and business district to look at that, but just on a more temporary basis. We'll hear testimony, but we might want to look at something, just make sure that we fill the breach.
And at this point, I think we have representatives from both Goose Hollow and Northwest that are here to give testimony from the neighborhoods.
Great. Do the reps want to come up? John, are you testifying? Julie? Jerry? And then we'll have questions. Welcome back. Glad you're here. Thanks for joining us. Juliet, you want to go first?
Okay. Good morning. I'm Juliet Hyams. I live at 2324 Northwest Marshall, and I'm here today as president of the Northwest District Association. And I'd like to thank you for allowing the review process that went on around this new Good Neighbor Agreement. We have gone through it with a fine-tooth comb. And I would also like to thank John for all the time he spent listening to our concerns and incorporating them into the document. I also reached out to the neighbors you just mentioned in the southeast portion of our neighborhood. We call them NWSE.
Okay.
That we can't come up with.
Otherwise known
NOLO.
As Pete.
It's nothing, you can't pronounce it. Since they are the immediate neighbors and they're the resident experts, so to speak, on what it's like to live near PGE Park, and we incorporated their feedback. Let them know that they have a voice in this, and I think the document is a lot stronger due to this process. And I'll be sending you a letter of support from my board. One concern I wanted to highlight that the letter also mentions is the need for robust enforcement in zones K and L, or whatever zone it turns out to be. And we feel it's critical to preserve the integrity and livability of the neighborhood. So thank you very much.
So the John.
Good morning. My name is John Bradley, and I reside at 2350 Northwest Johnson. I am here today on behalf of the NWDA and its planning committee. We believe that the GNA that you have before you today is an even better agreement than the one which preceded it. The new GNA takes into account the fact that PGE Park and the neighborhoods will be trading off fewer events for more intensive ones. In response to this, the new GNA calls and the CTMP calls for better security, better trash patrols, and better parking enforcement. PGE Park has always fulfilled its obligations to the neighbors, and we know it will continue to do so. We wish to express thanks to Ken from the park and David from the city for making this a much easier process than the last go through.
So, I remember that one.
Yeah, and specifically in terms of what in the K&L zone, yeah. We had the oversight committee had not made any specific recommendations other than more enforcement. The fact that the times will have to change there. Soccer is a 90-minute game with a halftime and maybe some overtime. But right now, that doesn't give – you've got a two-hour parking window down there in most of it. So that's going to have to be changed. Also, if you've read Kittleson's report, currently the average amount of time a person spends parked in a 60-minute parking spot in that area is 2.5 hours. So clearly there's some scofflaw stuff going on. So we also recommend that that stops. So we need to upgrade the parking enforcement. As for more specific recommendations, we've kind of left that to the committee that the mayor has formed to look at the entire arrangement down there. We didn't kind of want to fly off and do stuff.
Thank you. Did you have a question?
Are you satisfied with the noise regulations?
Yeah, they've remained essentially the same. The only thing that we have said is it's our understanding there will be a new speaker system put in, and so we requested that that new speaker system be tested in the same way that the old speaker system was tested in, and that was to hire an outside consultant, go around and take decibel readings, and that probably should be done anyway because we have new buildings, we get new bounces. So okay.
Thank you very much.
Jerry.
Ladies and gentlemen of the council, Mayor Adams, I'm Jerry Powell. I reside at 1926 Southwest Madison Street. I'm the planning chair of the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association. You have a letter in front of you to the council with respect to the Good Neighbor Agreement and the CTMP from the Goose Hollow Board. Our neighborhood, as well as the Northwest District Association, supports the GNA. We accepted the CTMP and appreciate the input that we were allowed to have into shaping the way that the CTMP was done, and are very much in support of its recommendations. Two of us here, John and I, were both parts of the first go-around that he referred to. And in the 10 years since we did that, we've been both, I think, surprised and very much delighted that it's worked as well as it has. We recommend that you consider a similar process, as a matter of fact, for other sports and entertainment venues in the city. Possibly even including ones that don't specifically belong to the city. The Good Neighbor Agreement doesn't answer all the challenges to neighborhood livability, and some of those reside in the trust that's been formed between the neighborhoods and the city with respect to parking enforcement. We assume that this is going to be an ongoing discussion. John brought up the time period that is also a problem in Goose Hollow. I mean, I expect that the character of the parking is going to change some. Soccer fans and baseball fans share interest in the same venue, and that's about all. A baseball game fans in front of my house, which is only two blocks from the stadium, tend to arrive onesies and twosies in their SUVs. And the folks that come to soccer games tend to arrive four at a time in a Honda. It makes makes a difference in the way the area parks. we haven't figured out how to deal with legitimate users of on-street parking in those periods, whether there's a game or not. That's something we need to figure out, and I assume that we and PVOT are going to be in some long discussions about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and I just wanted to underscore for Council's consideration, in addition to Juliet's most recent work, that you were part of the original 10-year-old Good Neighbor Agreement with Keith Wachowski that worked for the mayor's office at the time, and it's been great to have you for both, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Has anyone signed up to testify?
We have one person, Pete Colt.
Good morning, everybody. Mr. Fish, thank you. Mayor Adams, thank you. You heard our concerns. And I'm one of the stakeholders in that little part of the city that nobody wants to identify. Here's what we should call it. We should call it what it is. It's the Kids Zone Portland. More than 100,000 children a year walk in that neighborhood. And I watch them every day. Hundreds of them some days walk right by my windows. And it's a really wonderful experience. So let's just call it what it is. I want to thank Ken from PGE Park for all the work that he's done. I want to thank Juliet and John. They really did listen to our concerns in that part of the city. Overall, I give high marks to what we just saw. I would ask this, though, during the soccer games, consider an hour parking. I would ask to consider parking the parking enforcement cars on Northwest 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st at Cooch or at Burnside just to deter what's going on. I'd ask that Zone K and L are merged. I live on 18th between Davis and Everett, and 18th is split. The east side of 18th is Zone K. The west side is Zone L. And so, as John said, we have parking scoff laws. The good news is, this weekend, I made the city close to $300. And I always call parking enforcement and get them out of there. Parking enforcement, I give parking enforcement high marks as a bureau. They are effective, efficient, courteous, and always there when you call them. Is somebody here from Park?
Okay.
Yeah. So let's see here. After 11 o'clock, okay, we all know that we've had rapes in my neighborhood. First, we had the homeless women being raped last spring. And then last summer, we had women walking home from the Marathon Taverna on West Burnside at 18th. And the gypsy over there on 21st followed home and sexually assaulted. Now, these assaults happened unbelievably right in front of Rosehaven, one of them, and one of them right in front of the Northwest Children's Theater and School. Every day, I go out with my and pick up the condoms that are left over on the weekends. Now, I got to tell you, some months I pick up maybe 50, 60, 70 condoms. When you have this many children coming into the neighborhood, it's a problem. Kids are a lot faster than we are. By the time they reach that condom and put it in their mouths, you know, hepatitis germs, if you don't know how long a hepatitis germ can last out of the human body, look it up. You'll really be surprised. So this is a concern. What I'm asking on behalf of myself and my neighbors is that after 11 o'clock, we make it a tow-away zone, one zone, a tow-away zone after 11 o'clock, and that would really calm what's going on in our neighborhood and calm the noise that happens from all the bars and everything that goes on after the games go on. And I would say that's about it. I didn't. Thanks again for reading. Thank you, Mayor Adams.
Appreciate
thank
your
you.
Testimony,
thank you.
Pete.
One more quick thing.
Oh, you're out of time,
I
Pete.
Know, but I wanted to thank all of you because I set out a year ago to do this, and I didn't have a chance to do it. I had to dump the condoms instead. When you go home, please thank your family members, and thank you because, you know, it takes a lot of energy and effort and dedication to do what all of you do, and you all give up a lot of your free time for us, and I appreciate that. So thank you.
Thanks, Pete. Thank you. Does anyone else wish to testify on 195, 196? All right, they both moved to us. Oh, yes. You had questions, sorry.
Questions for staff.
Staff, if you could come back forward, John, both of you.
Thank you, and it's always good to hear when citizens have felt that the process has gone well and they're very happy with the results, so thank you for the good staff work on that. So the Good Neighbor Agreement references the Comprehensive Transportation Management Plan, but it sounded like the management plan is aspirational. How much of what you are setting out are we agreeing to do when we vote next week?
I think in terms of the light rail service and those issues, I think there's been a 10-year history of the park operator and TriMet working very well together on transit issues. TriMet's always been responsive in addressing the need for higher levels of light rail service for larger events. So I think that is just a continuation of the current operation. The park operator is very much committed to the programs that are geared towards the season ticket holders, offering a choice of prepaid parking or a transit ticket for that day, or if we establish this secure bike corral, that they would get there may be a charge for that they would get that, so that they're very committed to implementing that type of program. It's very good for their customer base. It's very good for their business. So we really don't have concerns that they'll follow through on those things, and they have been doing that already. The transit ticket for season ticket holders is already an existing program they implemented 2 or 3 years ago.
And they pay for that, or they?
They pay for that, yes.
Okay, that's very good. The bike parking, they do that at the Oregon Ducks games. And so I do have some familiarity with this, because the Oregon Duck football games, there's 60,000 spectators and only 5,000 parking spots. And it's amazing how smoothly it goes. So I think one of those things is the dollar bike parking. So where would that – have you given consideration to where that corral
I don't
could
think
be?
There's a specific site. It could be either they could rent a parking spaces within a surface parking lot nearby, set it up there, or a potential temporary street closure, which they do routinely for Portland State games, and that physical space could be used for the bike corral.
And I'm going to – if the neighborhood's in the – group concurs. I love the idea of the temporary street closures for both bike parking and provide sort of the plaza, a bigger plaza for people to go. So we'll mm-hmm. work through the folks immediately affected by it.
And going up a little back and forth, what's the status of extending Fairless Square, and who would pay for that?
Well, at this point, it is an idea. We would certainly want to have a further consultation with the council to see if that's an idea that the city would want to pursue. We have not talked to TriMet about it. It came up in our discussions as, idea that would facilitate, parking downtown and coming to, PG Park. So we would need, some direction to pursue it. We would certainly need to work with PBOT on a project like that.
So, and would this be always or just for game days and concerts and such?
That's part of the negotiation.
That would be, part of what would work best, and getting TriMet's feedback on that concept.
It would seem that if Peregrine would be willing to participate in making a ticket for the game be the extension of Fairless Square, that
the extension of Fairless Square, the number is like 260,000.
What number is
260,000? It costs... I think the price tag was, I don't know if it still is, about $260,000 to extend Fairless Square to the PG Park stuff.
All the time?
All the time.
So what I'm wondering is whether there could be some strategy whereby your game ticket or your concert ticket counts as the extension of Fairless Square for that.
We'll look at it. We'll look at it.
Okay. And then the other thing I was wondering about, there's nothing in the report about the capacity of the smart parks or the consideration of using the Rose Quarter garages and getting people on the MEX to Fairless Square in the Fairless area.
That was one of your recommendations.
Yes, if all the garages within Fairless Square would be, forget the free rail.
Free rail.
mm-hmm. All those garages might be that much more convenient, accessible, if the rest of the trip were free.
What's the capacity of those, of the smart parks on weekends, is my
question. Well, I think there's two right along light rail. I think in round numbers, it's about 2,000 parking stalls between the two, on the one on Alder and the one on 10th and Morrison.
What I'm wondering is, on a shopping day, how many of those spaces are actually available, and what have we looked at in terms of the Rose Quarter parking garages and encouraging people coming from outside of town to go park there and catch the light rail? I think that would be a helpful strategy. Plus,
we could look at that again. It was a strategy early on in 2001, and they found that they had very, very few patrons that were willing to park in the Rose Quarter and get shuttled to PG Park. They had extremely low numbers, and it was abandoned after the first year.
I think we're going to if we can believe what the emails are telling us, that folks are coming from Seattle, that they're coming from Bend, they're coming from the coast, they're very excited about this different kind of Major League Soccer, I think we're going to be we're told that we're going to be attracting people from outside.
Yes.
So if there was a way to direct those folks to the Rose Quarter, to our garages that we get revenue from, that would be really nice. And then they would probably not, because otherwise I can see them doing that, circling around the park, desperately looking for parking, and there isn't any. So I think that would be really helpful. And then my last question is, does the city commit to the increased enforcement that's been requested?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, this moves to a second reading next week. Both items. Can you please read the 10:15 time certain items number 197 and 198?
197, accept Public Involvement Advisory Council First Annual Progress Report. 198, appoint Mark Fetters, Donita Fry, Marty Stockton, Desiree Williams-Raji, Rick Nixon, and Allison Wisniewski to the Public Involvement Advisory Council.
Commissioner Fritz.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. I'm very happy to introduce the Public Involvement Advisory Council's first annual progress report. City Council created and inaugurated this advisory council in the fall of 2008. We appointed both community members from a wide range of backgrounds and city staff members from 13 different bureaus and charged them to work together to develop recommendations to help the city conduct more consistent and meaningful public involvement processes. Today, the Public Involvement Advisory Council returns to share with us their progress over the last year and to obtain our input as they move forward. In its first year, the Public Involvement Advisory Council has successfully maintained a strong group of 30 members, and that in and of itself speaks to the enthusiasm of both Bureau staff and community members working together and recognizing that this is a very important and purposeful committee. I'm very pleased with how diligently the group has been working to define the areas that we can improve on in the city. Some of my staff have been attending the meetings and are very impressed and keep wanting to go back also, which again, anytime people volunteer to sign up for more meetings is a good sign. Greatly appreciate the work that Afifa Ahmed from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, who staffs this group, has done, and also many thanks to all the PIAC members for the countless hours that you have put in developing this project. So now I turn it over to three Public Involvement Advisory Council members who are presenting to us today, Linda Nedokovin, Donita Fry, and Jen Clodius.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, Mayor Adams, and council members. We are here with great enthusiasm this morning to give you an update on our work to date and our plans for the future and to seek your feedback on those things. We're hoping to present the public involvement principles to you, which we'll talk about, talk with you more later. And we're here to ask that you partner with us in sharing this product with the community, engaging them also in an online survey, which will soon be up for their use, and supporting us in any way that you can in taking our work out to the public so we are able to involve them meaningfully in the process that we're undergoing here. We want to take a moment first to kind of remind you why we were created. Even though Portland is sometimes seen as mainline or central city in terms of process, there still remains a good degree of frustration in the community, often due to a lack of consistency and predictability across city processes. As a citizen member, I can testify to the shifts we go through sometimes moving from PBOT to planning, even in the course of the same project. So trying to find some ways that there's a little bit more predictability and consistency for both sides of the equation. We have also reports from folks of a lack of resources or guidelines or support for city staff who are trying to do the public involvement work that they're charged to do and want to do. And we also recognize the challenge of creating a versatile tool that works across bureaus. We know that a cookie-cutter model is not going to be a good fit here in Portland, and we've devoted a great deal of effort to think about how to structure things so that we have a set of overarching principles. At the same time, we have flexibility for bureaus to be able to tailor things to meet their needs. In the past, you adopted the 5-year plan to increase community involvement, and there was a lot of bureau innovation work, particularly Project 9, which created a matrix for looking at when and how you do various kinds of citizen involvement. And then the Public Involvement Task Force was created, and all of these previous efforts spoke to the need for an ongoing group to be created to try to shepherd the implementation of a more comprehensive public involvement effort in the city that spanned both sides of the bridge, the community side and the culture here at City Hall. And so that's what we've been trying to do.
What makes this group unique is that we were charged by you to create some public involvement guidelines. We were charged with supporting the implementation of those guidelines, and we were charged with giving you recommendations to accept and for us to help, hopefully for us to help to implement them. At this point, we are made up of 13 community members and 13 representation from 13 bureaus, and I would like to ask all the PIAC members to stand up. A fair number of people managed to get here.
Thank you.
And we would like to recognize Afifa Ahmed Shafi, who has been the ONI representative who has just absolutely kept us sane through this process. We started out by trying to come up with guiding principles. What were the core values that we all shared that would create a process within the city to involve the community at a much higher level? And those included, first off, representation, reducing the barriers to participation. This group definitely incorporates a variety of perspectives. We have community members from neighborhood groups, non-geographic groups, members of small businesses, and we're trying to really model a partnership of collaboration between community and the government. We've also tried to create an atmosphere in which we can be effective. We've all seen community involvement attempts before. We have tried to build on the past city's attempts. We're trying to ensure that our work leads to tangible, measurable outcomes. We're trying to ensure that we increase the quality of public participation, and we're trying to ensure the sustainability of high-quality participation. And for that, we're going to need consistency. Portland, again, with your leadership, appears to be leading the nation with this model. We're creating shared guidelines and expectations that bureaus can adapt to fit their own needs. And as Linda says, we recognize that we cannot use a cookie-cutter approach and expect every bureau with different resources to come up with the same ideas. But we would like to create a basic level of consistency across the city that will increase the public's ability to understand how they can get involved. This basic level of consistency will also provide bureaus with the resources and guidance on how they can create public involvement. This is a partnership between community and government. It's innovative, and as I said, as best as we can tell, this is the first time in the nation something like this has been created by a city government and supported by the government to create this participation. And finally, implementation. Past groups have had outstanding recommendations, but they were temporary ideas. So we're committed for the long term, not only to create these, but also to help the bureaus to implement them. Specifically, we're incorporating action steps, monitoring, evaluation into all of our recommendations to council. We'll be providing ongoing guidance and support to bureaus in implementation for any recommendations that council approves.
Can I interrupt you a second? We have some special guests behind you all.
Why?
Where are you all from? Mill Park Elementary. I hear the smartest kids in the city are from Mill Park Elementary. Is that true? Yeah, I thought so. Well, welcome to City Council. This is a City Council meeting. We represent you and run in the city. Are you enjoying your visit?
Yeah.
Is it your first time to City Hall?
Yes.
All right. Are you all studying hard?
Yes.
All right.
That was quieter.
You're especially strong over here. I like that. I like that. Well, we're really glad that you're here, and we hope you enjoy your visit.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
Thank you.
Public involvement, right?
That's right.
Exactly. Start them early.
That's the best way to start with our youth. The collection that Jen was referring to took the first 3 months of the work of the PIAC group identifying the guiding principles, and then the next 3 months were taken to review the past recommendations. And building on the past efforts, this group looked at 65 prior recommendations, including the effort identified in an earlier slide. And out of these recommendations, three natural categories emerged. We formed our working groups from these categories, which are the Community Empowerment Group, which came together to support and increase the city's skills and ability to engage the community in a community empowerment model. Next, the policy group emerged, and it will be to develop citywide policies that advance quality public involvement, and then a process group, which will design internal guidelines that guide and support bureaus in implementing quality public involvement processes. The Community Empowerment Group will continue to work on focusing on non-geographical communities that do not often participate in the formal neighborhood systems. We will reach out to City Council, City Bureau directors, community groups, and the community at large to assess what has been done that works well, what we've tried that has not worked in the past. We will analyze the assessment data. Our efforts will be focused on providing bureaus with best practices, support, and a model how to effectively include non-geographical folks.
And the policy subcommittee is the group that took the first pass at drafting the public involvement principles that you've received. We tried to draw from the best of the previous work that had been done by citizen groups here in Portland and also look at what was happening in other places. And then we had the remainder of our public involvement advisory committee do the final tweaking on the wording. So we're hoping to bring these principles back to you for adoption. And as I indicated earlier, we have we're about ready to launch a way to involve the community in a conversation about them. We're also wanting to sort of point out some of the special parts of these guidelines. We think probably every word is special after working on them for so long, but the partnership notion, particularly the idea of we're having two-way conversations, it's the city and the community together. The conversation is going up and down channels both ways, and early involvement so that citizens, community members are involved in helping to define a problem or an issue, not just to respond to a choice of solutions much further down the line. We're definitely looking at building relationships and community capacity throughout any work that we do. Our goal is always to have collaborative working relationships and long-time learning opportunities for community partners and stakeholders and city staff as well as for any of our processes. Obviously, inclusiveness and equity is a big one, trying to look at kind of where we are now, but also keep in mind things that have not worked as well in our past that we perhaps can find ways to correct in the present. Trying to find ways to make sure that historically excluded individuals and groups really are involved in authentic processes that make sense to them and really tap their knowledge and skills and contributions for our community. And obviously, good quality process design and implementation, that's a given. We want to continue. Again, it's not more process, we're after better process, so no one's time is wasted. Transparency, again, no matter what individual tweakings and tailorings bureaus may need to do in terms of coming up with public involvement plans for themselves, transparency has to be a guideline, has to be a principle that overshadows everything else so that the public receives the information they need to be able to participate effectively and to understand what is happening. And accountability, finding ways for city leaders and staff to be accountable for ensuring that there's meaningful public involvement throughout the work of our city. So we have some work to do with our principles. We have some benchmarks and some outcomes included with them, and we'll be continuing probably to refine those, again, thinking about ways that we can all be more accountable as we do this work. We're hoping also that we might take a baby step, which would be to have staff begin to do supplemental staff reports with ordinance packets when they come to council that speak to what public involvement processes were involved in a given project or product, and then to look also at what changes may have occurred as a result of the public being involved in those processes. In the perhaps more distant future, we're hoping that each bureau could come up with its own public involvement plan that, again, is embedded in the larger set of guiding principles, but is tailored to the particular sets of stakeholders and situations that each bureau is likely to encounter in the course of doing its work. And here again, we're hoping that the PIAC can serve as a resource and a support to the bureaus in developing such plans and also in implementing them across time. One strategy perhaps would be to work with bureau advisory committees to involve these groups, to strengthen them and to involve them in the public involvement design and implementation of these kinds of processes. But these are the kinds